It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, hour number two, 7:07. Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo, coming to you live from the Built Ford Tough studio. The guys will be back after Labor Day next Tuesday as they enjoy the final week of summer and we get set for the NFL season. We're going to do the Mets, but, you know, it's interesting with the football what CeeLo brought up in Tommy DeVito. And he's got to have some anxious moments, I would think, although, you know, he's professional career is going to continue, of course. What was cut down week for you? How difficult? Now, you clearly were never in that situation where you were going to think you were going to be released, but you were with guys that were fighting for their professional life. Like, how difficult is this week in the locker room?
It's tough, man, because a lot of these guys have been together since the spring or have been before they got either drafted or, you know, pretty much trying to get into it. They've been around each other, meaning they've either visit the same team or been a part of that kind of wave. And so when you land on a team with a guy, like all I could do is go back to my rookie year. I got drafted with 14 guys. Only four guys made the team.
Wow.
And all those guys, what's weird about it, like you go through your OTAs, you go through your training, you go through lifting weights, you do all these things together. You do form a brotherhood. However, we all know that day is coming. But there's nothing that prepares you for the goodbye, because you technically don't have a goodbye. I remember when I was walking through the building and I knew it was cut day, there were about six or seven scouts that were behind the door, like in a line, like almost like a firing squad. Mm. And when you're a rookie for the Steelers, you get off the bus and you walk into the building. And obviously, you kind of know your routine. You kind of get your stuff on, get showered up, all that stuff, get ready for the day. There were seven scouts sitting there. And as we rolled into the building, they literally point at you. They're like, you, bring your playbook and we need you upstairs. And I remember walking, right? And as they're pointing, as I walked through them, I stopped. And one of the scouts was like, Willie, what's wrong? I was like, did you point at me? I wasn't sure. And he was like, no, go get ready for the day. And I remember turning around and it was only me, Santonio Holmes, and like two other people. And I was just like,
the other guys were gone.
Gone. And to this day, I haven't seen him.
Really?
They
didn't resurface in the league, and that was their shot.
All gone. And I never said goodbye. I never saw him again. Like, at an event, it was just like, boof.
It's amazing to think, like, and I guess it could happen here, too, if, like, Eddie or me or whoever got fired today. It's like, it's your home for, in that case, months and months and months, and you got your key card, and you're going to work every day, and then all of a sudden, one day, like, we're done with you. Give me your key card. Give me the playbook. Get the hell out of here.
That's it. And then on top of that, you get to know a guy's story. You know, his mom, his dad. Does he have kids? What he's been through? Where did he go? You know, they're like, you kind of, your world kind of immerses in his. And that's what builds team chemistry overall. So it was tough to see guys walk out because, you know, the biggest problem is I think some guys mentally cut themselves, especially if they look at the depth chart like, well, I'm third string. I'm fourth string, man. There's no way I'm making this team. And that's why I tell a lot of young guys, especially, you know, I just came from Steelers camp not too long ago. I'm like, man, don't cut yourself. Just whatever the reps are, just do your best, right? And when the preseason comes, wherever you play or however it, you know, comes into fruition for you, just give it your best, man. Because I think some guys start looking at the depth chart. They start looking at themselves. They start looking at lack of reps. They're like, man, I'm out of here. I'm like, that's the worst place to be. At the end of the day, sometimes some teams do bring you back. They bring you on a practice squad, and they'll give you another opportunity, or they kind of say, hey, we got to do some things now, or aren't I in, so we'll bring you back later down the road. But it's a tough time for a lot of guys because it's a lot of hard conversations you're going to have, and it's rough.
Well, it's really amazed me for, you know, all these years watching football. And by the way, training camp coverage on The Fan brought to you by Geico. Switch and save, get more with Geico. So, you know, the NFL goes from 90 to 53. Mm-hmm. College football, I mean, they can have a million guys on a roster.
Right.
You know, how do you cut through? Like, if you're talking about these guys cutting themselves because they're not happy with the reps they're getting. If 37 guys are getting cut, like, how much of that film is really being processed by the head coach, or is it being brought to the head coach by the coaches that are watching and say, hey, you might want to check out number 78.
Sure.
Because this guy actually can play a little bit.
Well, I think it's they have a whole department. I mean, the whole front office and scouting department, they have pros and college scouts, and obviously the offensive staff, defense staff, they vet all that out. But I try to tell a lot of guys in reference to making a team, you always hear the cliche, well, you know, play like it's your last down. right? But it's bigger than that. Like, you gotta stand out in some form of way. Like, that's why I was never against guys fighting in training camp, because it shows that you're will, like, you're not just a body out there. Like, you're actually kind of doing something. So I think guys just have to have a mindset, especially when they go into other operations. Because whoever's cut, they're going to get picked up by some other team. Like, just try to stand out in some facet. Obviously, do your job, but just do something. Like, you know, I was always, if I wasn't getting enough playing time, I was going to try to pancake a guy in practice. I was.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way I could stand out, to show that I was ready for the fight. I was ready for the opportunity. So I was always, that's why I got in so many training camp fights, because I was always like, man, you know, when I got to Steelers in 06, they had just come off a Super Bowl. They didn't need Willie Colon.
Right?
They didn't need me. So I was like, man, what am I going to do to show Bill Cowher, who was the head coach at the time, that I'm worthy of being on a championship outfit? So I was getting fights. I was always trying to pancake a guy. I was hitting guys after the whistle. So I was doing something. And so I developed this mentality of being chippy and scrappy. And then guys was like, oh, well, the kid's a fighter. Let's put him out there and see what he got.
Yeah, nice quality to have.
Yeah. And so that's why I tell guys, just try to stand out in some facet. Yeah, it may be kind of not warranted from the head coach, but at the end of the day, you got to get a job. You had to win a position.
Right.
And so you got to stand out somewhere.
As much as you're a team, you're still fighting for a paycheck every
day. Man, Bruce Arians and I got to credit him for saying, B.A., Bruce Arians, who is my offensive coordinator with the Steelers, obviously won a Super Bowl with Brady and the Bucks. When he was out OC, he used to stand up in front of the team, excuse me, the offensive unit, and be like, hey, we are not the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. The Pittsburgh Steelers will be rolling out opening day. You guys are a bunch of individuals trying to become Pittsburgh Steelers.
That's interesting.
And he would say that, and the guys would be like, ha, ha. And then cut day started rolling around like it is right now, and everybody stopped laughing about it.
Not funny anymore.
Because it became real. Like, he was like, you guys are a bunch of individuals. And he was saying that to guys who had contracts.
Mm.
And he's like, some of you guys think you guys have it, like it's already locked. That is not true. The roster is not set, and they will, and like he would just say it redundantly, and guys would be like, yeah, B.A., we hear you. And as we got closer, you started seeing the heightened anxiety, especially on the practice field.
Sure.
And he would look at guys and be like, and he would do like this.
Clock's ticking.
And like he would say, like, you can come out here and just keep messing up or having a day or just packing it in. But the Steelers, he says, my Pittsburgh Steelers will be there opening day. I don't know where you would be, but my Pittsburgh Steelers. And guys laughed until days like today. It's like, man, I hope I'm one of his.
Yeah. That's harsh. It's a harsh business, there's no doubt. As we, you know, now that we are, you know, a week and a half away, has anything changed your mind about these two teams here with the Jets and Giants? Or do you feel the same way about them you felt 4 weeks ago?
I think I feel the same way. I think the Jets, I'm happy the Jets have really understood that one of the things I think they failed at in the draft was not giving Quentin Williams any help. I thought they needed more beef eaters. And I think the fact that they got Harrison Phillips and they got the kid Juwan Boggs, I may be messing his name up for the Browns, they realized that if they want to get the best out of Quentin Williams, they got to give him some help. They got to get somebody to take some of those double teams off him. And they did so. So I'm happy in that regard. I think they're still a little deficient at the quarterback position. Nothing against Justin Fields. But when you start seeing some of the other elite talent at that position, there's a drop off.
Have you been out there? Have you seen him?
I haven't seen him. I've been watching him. I watched a lot of the preseason. I thought he looked fairly good. I didn't think he looked awful at all.
I had a caller yesterday. I thought his question was, you're a good person to ask. He's like, you know, this guy was so good in college. He was drafted high. He's obviously got ability. What is it about him that says he can't throw the football?
I think it's just his makeup and how he was. People don't understand. When he was at Ohio State, One of the biggest knocks on Justin Fields is that he holds on to the ball. He has bad foot mechanics. He's a big time athlete. The kid is tall. I think he's like 6'4". He can run. He can do a lot of things with the football when running the ball. Nevertheless, but when he was at Ohio State, he was actually sitting in that pocket and look for the big shots. Today's game is getting the ball out your hand so fast, right? Like 2.3 seconds. Mm-hmm. Just get out. That's not the genesis of his game. So now when he got to the league, and you see him with the Bears, and you've seen him, and everything that he went through with the Bears is crazy between multiple head coaches and on and on. Landing in Pittsburgh, got a shot. The ball was taken out of his hands, even though he had a 4-2 record. Some of those miscues and mechanics still kind of linger with him, still holding on to the ball, bad footworks. And now he's with the Jets. You just hope that there's been some maturity now that he's with a different outfit. And I think the one way they can help him out is being able to run in the ball. He should not be throwing the ball 35 times a game, 30 games. He's a play-action guy. Let him run the ball. I think he adds another dimension to the run game because of his ability. And I think you just he's a player to me that comes with instructions. He's not a guy you just say, hey, we're going to put the offense on. You're like, no, he's capable of doing good things, but it's limited, right? It's in a bracket. So use those things and allow him to flourish within the offense. But I think the strength of this offensive line, strength of the Jets team, excuse me, is the offensive line. And I think Justin Fields, Breland Allen, Breece Hall, Isaiah Davis, they can impact that in a lot of ways. I don't see this guy sitting back there and winning a game solely off his arm. I don't think he's that type of quarterback.
What I'm hearing is 1980s type of offense. Run sure. First, pass when needed.
I think it helps the defense out.
Yeah.
I think this, like I said, I think the strength of their team right now is the offensive line. They have, you know, good young talent that can really get it done. Is play behind them. You know, like, don't put too much on this kid right now.
Yeah, and shorten the game.
Shorten the game.
You know, long drive, shorten the game, but get in the end zone too. I mean, that's the other thing.
You got to score.
Yes,
100%.
If you're settling for field goals, we've seen that that play way too often around here.
Right.
It's hard to win. 9-6.
But in reference to the Giants, I think they're going to be fine. I think there's a lot of talk about their schedule and how hard it is. You know, listen, I think Russ is going to be the saving grace. Now, how well he plays, I don't know. But I think having a competent, experienced quarterback to kind of lead you through this gauntlet. I mean, you're talking about Washington, Dallas, KC, and Los Angeles Chargers there.
Tough. You know, as I said yesterday, you don't know until you play these games. They always play Washington tough. And Dallas is kind of, they're interesting to me.
What makes them interesting, they don't have Micah.
Right, so and I don't know that he's going to be there week one. I have no idea. And so there's a little bit of instability with that team right now. So who knows? You know, you've got two games. I think the two games are obviously critical for the team for sure. But splitting those two somehow is critical to me for the fan base.
Oh, if they're 2-2, you should be jumping out. If they're 2-2 coming out of September, yeah, you should be.
And I also think, trust me, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not expecting them to beat the Chiefs at all, especially not in primetime. But if I was going to have to play Kansas City, I'd much rather do it in September than 100%. Later in the season when they start humming.
Right, when they know, but they start getting their wheels underneath them. I agree.
And I love the fact for them, they get the Chargers at 1 p.m. And, you know, those West Coast teams playing those early games on the East Coast doesn't mean they always lose. I'm not saying that, but it's different for them.
Well, when I was at Pittsburgh, I always chalked it up as a dub because they did the time difference.
Yeah, it screws you up a little bit.
And then, you know, they're coming from 80 degrees, sunny weather, flip-flop weather, and they come to Pittsburgh, it's 50 degrees.
Sure.
So they're like,
now, it could be 80 degrees in September here for sure.
100%.
But it is still different for them. And so you got four games. You know, I'm not expecting 2-2, but I also don't think it's so far-fetched either with their defense. That's what I think.
And I agree with you, especially when you look at, listen, we love to say Jaden Daniels would come out hot. We don't know that.
No, year two. Really take a step back. You never know.
100%.
You never know.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, the guys are out. They'll be back after Labor Day next Tuesday. Willie and Jerry in for them. Built Ford Tough Studio on a gloomy Monday morning, but it's been nice out a little bit later. It's actually clear enough already.
As you said that, the sun.
Nice little live shot from CBS Sports Network. Not too bad.
CeeLo, how are we feeling?
Hanging in.
Okay.
You know? It's a survive in advance kind of day, my friend.
Oh, every day for me, pretty much.
Well, in advance.
We'll try to advance
as you're surviving.
Update segment here brought to you by Flag and Anthem. Real close for real life. Emotional night for Jazz Chisholm Jr. in the Bronx. A day after the passing of his best friend, he reached a career milestone in the Yankees' win over the Red Sox. That makes him our thriving player of the game. Brought to you by Thrivewell Infusion.
0-1. Here's Pitt. Swing on a high fly ball. Right field. Got a chance. Going back. Garcia looking up. Goodbye. Two-run homer. Jazz Chisholm. Yankees 2, Red Sox nothing here in the second.
That's Dave Sims here on The Fan. Career home run number 100 opened the scoring, and he would later cap the scoring with a two-run homer in the eighth. Yankees 7, Red Sox 2, and Jazz are Yankees' thriving player. The game brought to you by Thrivewell, New York's premier infusion and injection center. Saving lives drip by drip. Visit ThriveWellInfusion.com. So the two homers, four RBIs for Jazz. Trent Grisham with a couple of homers, two RBIs, two walks out of the leadoff spot, and the Yankees salvaged the finale after getting outscored 19-4 in the first three games of this series. Here was Jazz on his memorable night at the plate.
It sounds better with the win, so it makes it feel even better that we won the game, especially against a team that's really been beating us a lot this year. And, I mean, that should take us into a good momentum right now.
Problem is, they said the same thing coming off the home run onslaught against
the
Rays.
I know.
And they looked like crap Thursday through Saturday.
I actually feel for these guys in the sense of they talk every day.
Yeah.
And maybe not every player does.
Close enough.
I mean, you're talking at least a few times a week. There are only so many things you can say after these wins and losses.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
You know,
but
you
to
want
see
the-
those point after the I mean, they beat the Rays 13-3, and everybody looked like they was on. I thought we were going to.
It
kind
felt
of
like
I was like, oh, here we go.
And almost gave that game away on Wednesday night, but yep. Got away with it.
Stanton on the field, hey, you ready for Boston? Oh, yeah, we're ready. That, they weren't.
I felt that when he said, I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go.
Four-game series, Red Sox, wild card standings, and it didn't work out so well.
How about the double hit yesterday? Did you see that?
117.8, I think it was.
He is just so strong. It's insane.
Have you ever seen him in person?
I have not.
He's an Adonis.
Yeah. No, I'm aware.
Like, a couple years ago, I played in CeCe Sabathia's All-Star game, and he happened to have Judge and Stan. They participated. Softball,
okay.
Excuse me, yes. Yeah. Charity softball game. And I was messing around with it, kind of talking, and I put my hand on their stomach. It was like touching marble. I was just like,
I believe it.
I was like, these two, I was like, you guys are baseball players?
They rub your belly?
Yeah, well, mine was just pudgy and brown, soft.
If theirs is marble, what are we calling yours?
Oh, I have a kegerator by far. It's round and hard. Yep.
Kegerator.
Yeah.
At least you got that experience. Very nice. Here's Aaron Boone. He acknowledged that it didn't go so well, but at least it didn't get swept.
You know, definitely not the weekend we wanted to have, especially coming off a really good road trip. And but a good win, you know, nonetheless.
They salvaged the finale, even with the Red Sox in the loss column now. Tight wild card standings in the American League. In come the Nationals for an interleague series. You got Cam Schlittler and Brad Lord in tonight's opener with coverage at 6:25 here on The Fan and the free Odyssey app. Hey, the Mets are now 0-53 when trailing after eight innings this season.
The pitch hit high in the air, right field. Foul territory, Olsen is over, onto the track, makes the catch, and the Braves win the game. Now, Atlanta wins the finale 4-3.
Go ahead there, Jerry.
Here's the glass half full.
All right.
It also means they're 69-8 when they have a lead.
Yes.
Or tied.
Sure.
Tied or with the lead after the eighth inning.
But last year's team, a little bit more... of the comeback gusto, you know?
Yeah, no,
so
not.
It would be nice to put a one in that column at some point. Well, that's what I mean.
You had Pete Alonso up there and Jeff McNeil, and you get two feeble pop-ups.
Yes. Keith Rad, final call, Odyssey Mets Radio, 4-3 after Juan Soto brought the Mets within one. He had an RBI single in the ninth, and the Mets were threatening, but as Jerry mentioned, Alonso and McNeil both pop up to end it, and it caps an afternoon where they went 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position and left 10 on base.
It's another one of those games, because it's interesting how you bring up last season. I was mentioning this yesterday. The game to me that feels like a microcosm of this season so far was the Friday night game against the Giants at Citi Field, where the crowd was in a frenzy, the place was packed, they're making the comeback, they're doing everything they need to do. They just don't get that big hit when you think it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been like their MO almost the entire season. Once we've gotten through April, they just don't seem to get the big hit.
Early 2-0 lead goes by the wayside as Atlanta rallied for a pair against David Peterson in the sixth. Two more off Gregory Soto in the eighth. Here was Peterson on what went wrong in his sixth inning after no damage through five.
Get up until that point, and you know, I just didn't do a good enough job after the ground ball, continuing to get ahead of guys and fell behind in the count. Obviously, the walk don't help, and then got behind the Murphy and was aggressive with the sinker, and he was able to take it the other way.
Yeah, four walks in total for him across his 5 2/3. Couldn't quite get through the sixth. A bright spot, another home run for Mark Vientos. Two-run shot to open the scoring in the second. He's been coming alive at the plate, simplifying things a bit.
I was trying to be someone I wasn't, and covered too many pitches, and that would get me out of my strike zone and all that, but I'm just convicted on what I want.
Try to carry that into this home series with the Phillies. Beginning tonight at Citi Field, you got Kodai Senga, Christopher Sanchez. Mets are still a game and a half up on the Reds for that final NL wild card spot. Cincinnati dropped 2 out of 3 in Arizona over the weekend, but they did win Sunday. They will visit the Dodgers in a series beginning tonight in L.A. Dodgers avoided a sweep in San Diego, homering their way past the Padres Sunday 8-2, which included one for Shohei Ohtani, who I guess had a Padres heckler.
Oh, the guy by the on-deck circle.
Yeah. So he was, I guess, going after pretty much all of the Dodgers, but specifically Ohtani, who had a rough weekend offensively. So good on both guys. Ohtani hits the home run. He goes over looking for the high five, and the guy smiled and high-fived him back. So they had some fun with it, which is nice to see. All in good fun. And
that's almost like the Twitter trolls.
A little bit.
F you, you stink, you suck, blah, and then you meet him at an event.
They love you.
I listen every day, man. I'm this guy. I'm like, wait, you're the guy that hates me.
Yeah.
Ah, no, I'm just joking. Okay. That was what that looked like yesterday when I went over to shake his hand.
Yeah, pretty much. So home run number 45 for Ohtani. We go to Seattle now. Record-breaking day for the big dumper.
Cal! Blast out! Left field! There it goes! Cal Raleigh! His 49th home run! By a major league catcher.
There you go. That lays it out for you. Mariners TV, home runs number 48 and 49 to pass Salvador Perez. Also, his ninth multi-home run game of the season, passing Mickey Mantle.
Pretty good.
For the most multi-home run games by a switch hitter in a single season in major league history. So just a storybook year for him continues as he has put up monster numbers for Seattle, and they are very much in the thick of this wild card race as well. NFL-wise, we talked about Tommy DeVito last hour. Roster cuts coming for the locals. We'll see what happens with him as far as the Giants are concerned over the next 24 hours or so, a little bit more than that. Also, the Jets sending veteran defensive tackle Derek Nnadi back to the Chiefs in a swap of late-round draft picks in a deal that went down yesterday. So those were among the moves that they have made thus far. Brian Schottenheimer, I don't know what the result of it was, but he revealed Saturday he was going to speak to Micah Parsons yesterday about his, I don't know, I guess we'll call it behavior.
Eat nachos.
Well, that
laying on the trainer's table.
Yeah. Only
like
guy not
for a flight.
Yeah, only guy not in a jersey during the final preseason game. So we know it's been an ongoing saga and stuff between him and Jerry Jones. But
I'll talk to Willie about this. But did you see? And maybe you can get it if possible. The DeMarcus Lawrence conversation with Ryan Clark.
I did not.
It.
No,
it's so dumb. DeMarcus. Well, it was dumb that the fact that he admitted that he didn't. The reason for him avoiding the Commanders because he didn't want to jump on a bandwagon. Like, why wouldn't you want to jump on a bandwagon?
I was talking about the Micah Parsons thing.
I apologize. I was talking about DeMarcus Lawrence. I jumped ahead of there. I apologize.
Well, he's...
Well, I am too.
Yeah.
DeMarcus Lawrence talking
which
about...
Which DeMarcus Lawrence thing are you
Jerry
talking
Jones.
About?
Well, he admitted... So, excuse me. He had said something like he had an opportunity to join the Commanders, but he didn't want to because he didn't want to jump on a bandwagon. And I'm just like, don't you want to win?
Join the Commanders when?
This year. Instead of going to Seattle.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. And I was just like, so you don't want to win? Like, why?
I didn't see that
convenient
clip.
Thing to say after the fact, perhaps.
But I heard him say that, so all over the road. But
no, the clip where he's talking about dealing with Jerry Jones, I thought was very revealing, actually. So maybe if you can, no big deal.
Very good. Fair enough. I'm sure we can. I mean, if you saw it, it's out there.
Yeah, we'll find it for sure. Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, let's go to some golf here. I know Boomer and Gio are in here, but Tommy Fleetwood finally getting across the finish line. I was so happy for this guy. Everybody was, it seemed like. I mean, from Justin Rose to Tiger Woods on Twitter to Rory McIlroy right on down the line as he was able to comfortably cruise to victory at East Lake on Sunday.
And that's not a lot of speed, but good enough. The agonizing wait is over. Fleetwood finally for everything. The FedEx Cup.
That's Dan Hicks on NBC.
It's a hell of a tournament to win.
It is. I mean, I guess you could poke a hole in the fact that it wasn't a full field, but it's the 30 best players
in the season.
It's the best
players. Yes, exactly.
And it's a nice $10 million check for him as well as he wins by three. Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
certainly.
Good.
So, you know, maybe took him till the back nine to kind of kick it in gear yesterday, but enough to get it done down the stretch. And it wasn't quite Tiger at East Lake in 2018 as far as the crowd and people coming up on 18, but people were very pumped up for him, understandably.
He's had a great season. He just hasn't won until this weekend.
Had a couple of 54-hole leads that were coughed up or not finished.
Made a lot of money.
He sure did.
He made a lot of money.
I mean, yeah, he was basically...
I mean, on the season, he's made a fortune.
The season, his career, I mean, he's been among the best players to not win. So now he's on U.S. soil.
He's
won over in Europe. So he's got that checked off. And from everybody you listen to, talk to, hear from, apparently as good a guy as there is. So that's pretty cool for him. So McIlroy didn't factor into this. Did you see? So he teed off his final round at noon.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's Georgia. It's not like it's across the country. He was at the U.S. Open last night.
Was he really?
The clip I saw posted was at like 9:24.
Yeah.
So sitting in his seats, and perhaps he took in some of this chaos that went down with Daniil Medvedev in his match where He's down facing match point, playing this unseeded Frenchman whose name I should have here.
Bonzi. Bonzi.
Yeah, sure. And I get, did you see the only thing I saw was the clip after the fact. Did you actually see footage of this photographer?
Yes.
So where did he actually go out onto the court?
So he goes out after the fault.
He starts walking
in the right corner. Okay. He comes out of the right corner.
So this guy, clearly the point itself or the first serve was not impacted necessarily by this guy.
I don't think so at all.
Which is an odd rule.
And if you
heard
the chair umpire, he said because of the delay, there was no delay.
Right.
It was quick.
Yeah.
He's like, we're going to grant a new first serve,
yes.
Which was bizarre. But all he did was like come out a few steps as if he thought the match might have been over. I don't know what he did. And then that's when he shoes him back out.
I threw a bunch of these clips
in.
I didn't really.
Yeah, I think he got kicked out.
The photographer did?
I believe so.
The rest of the way.
I don't know that. I thought he had his credential revoked.
I believe this is the first part where the chair ump announces first serve and then Medvedev would kind of get a little perturbed.
First serve. Ladies and gentlemen, because of the delay caused by an outside interference, first serve has been granted.
All right, so you hear the reaction from the crowd. So that was the announcement, and then Medvedev comes over, and initially you couldn't.
Did you see this by any chance?
I didn't. I'm kind of picking
it up.
Wait
to listen to this.
So you couldn't. Chris. This was the part where he now speaks into the open mic, because at first you can't hear it great, but he's asking the chair.
At one point, he stares right into the camera.
Are you a man? Yeah. Then he goes over it. Right. He's playing it up to the camera.
Oh, you want to go home? He wants to go home, guys. He doesn't like to be here. He gets paid by the match, not by the hour.
Yeah. And he's gesturing to the crowd, and then
that's the chair umpire he's talking to.
The guy who's officiating the match there at the center court.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. What did Riley Opelka say? What did Riley Opelka say?
Let's play.
And I let the crowd know.
Just totally lost control of his emotions.
Yeah, I'm talking about Medvedev, because he's now trying to get the crowd into this whole thing. And they did. They responded for him. And to the point where there was like a 6-minute delay between points. And the crazy part is he ends up surviving that match point.
And then blowing past him in the fourth set.
He wins that set. He wins the fourth set. But then, he ended up losing and then just destroying his racket viciously as he was sitting
I saw that clip.
Yeah. So he's had a rough year, I know. And he's a little bit of a head case to begin with. But that was quite the scene late night over there in Queens in the very early stages of the
show. I'm happy with it. I will say this. I was reading Twitter when I saw the clip, and a lot of people were getting him like, he should grow up. That's nonsense. You shouldn't be smashing a racket. I'm like, what do you want to do? Just lost.
Well, I think people were like, you lose, you pack up your stuff, you go off the court, and you can do that sort of in the locker room.
You see basketball players slam the basketball down. You see football players slam their helmet.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I expect a tennis player to smash his racket?
Me smashing a clipboard on a 9U football
team. That too.
Because if you saw it, it went on and on and on. And plus, he'd already made the big scene after that whole controversial situation. And the guy who won the match, it's a nice moment for him. And it kind of gets sidetracked by everything that's going on with Medvedev. So
just think what the Ryder Cup's going to be like.
It's funny you say it. I was thinking the same thing when you listen to And look, that crowd is not. How do I say this? Like, I feel like
say classy.
No. I just feel like while it takes place in New York, you got a lot of outsiders that are coming in, and you will for the Ryder Cup.
Yes.
But I feel like the Ryder Cup even more so will have more of a local feel.
Yeah, I would
than
agree
the
with
U.S.
that.
Open. Does.
I know the one time I went to the U.S. Open a couple of years ago, there was not a lot of English. When you walk around, you hear accents and other languages nonstop.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to get that at Bethpage.
I don't either. I think it's just going to be a lot of New York golf fans.
It's going to be chaos.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, 7:51. It is Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo. It was interesting. So CeeLo played the Daniil Medvedev stuff last night. So it made me think of, because every headline is essentially like, wow, crazy scene at the U.S. Tennis Center last night in Flushing. Wow, that was nuts. What happened with the cameraman? Can you believe this happened at the U.S. Open? So it made me think of different sports scenes that were kind of chaotic or a little bit nuts. And I'm gonna give you five of them.
Okay.
All right. And you tell me what I left out. I'm sure I left something out, for sure.
Now, just for context, are we talking like overall or something that happened recently? Okay.
Overall. No, a lot of these are not recent actually at all.
Okay.
But I think they stand in your mind and they're etched in your brain forever. So like the first one, the Malice at the Palace.
Sure.
That might be the craziest live sports scene I've ever seen. I don't know how anything can compete with that.
Well, I mean, that was...
I mean, players in the crowd.
People got locked up.
Yeah. And it was dangerous. And you got crap being thrown all over the place. Ron Artest losing his mind. Like,
changed his name after that.
Yeah, well, I don't know how long after that, but yes, he did. So I would say that one, to me, would be probably one of the nuttiest scenes I've ever seen.
Mm.
That would be one. Another one I put, Tyson biting Holyfield.
I mean, that's iconic. That's,
right?
That's nuts. Yeah, I mean it's nuts because I don't think we've ever seen it. I mean, that's pre-UFC.
Right, for
I mean,
sure.
As far as, like, gore and blood. Mm-hmm. And I mean, boxing is a bloody sport in itself. But
and also at that level. Like, maybe it happened at a low-level, you know, match somewhere in Louisiana.
I think what's interesting about that, you had two titans of the sport, and it went there, right?
Right, that's what I mean.
So I agree with you on that.
So that one's a pretty good one. I put down, all right, the band, Cal Stanford. That's
when the
kind
game
of iconic.
Wasn't over. Yeah.
You know, the band's on the field, right? And they run it back, and they score, and they win the game.
Yep.
All right, so that's a good one. I got two more here. The earthquake, the World Series earthquake, is one of the Bay Area World Series in San Francisco. There was an earthquake. The Bay Bridge almost fell apart during a World Series game.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm throwing my hands up.
Susan Waldman had to call in because she was right. She was covering that for us. Is that
yes?
Right. And so she called in, like, terrified. You've got 50,000 people in a stadium, and the world is shaking. And you went, ah.
Well, because I just experienced the earthquake in New Jersey, and I was like, eh,
that's
that was
not.
It.
Come on. An earthquake 2.2 on the Richter scale compared to, Eddie, do you remember what that one was? That was in the 7s, wasn't it?
I don't know if it was a 7, but I know the Bay Bridge collapsed.
No, that was some scene.
I don't mean to scoff at it.
Scoffed?
I did. I guess because I experienced my first earthquake, and I was just like, that's it. Yeah.
I mean, come on now. Hold on. I want to see, because I should have done this. This is my fault, but I just thought of it. What was earthquake? What did I say? Magnitude?
Yeah, it's 6.9.
All right, so it was right around 7. All right, so you checked it for me, and you scoff at 6.9.
Yeah.
You know what a 6.9 earthquake is?
No, I don't. I don't know what that
clearly.
Is.
Clearly. Not good. That's what that is. And then the last one I brought up, George Brett, the Pine Tar incident at Yankee Stadium. You know what's interesting about that is we've all seen the clip. We've all seen Billy Martin go out. We saw the umpire grab the bat. They look at the pine tar, and then he calls him out. And we've all seen George Brett lose his mind. When you watch the extended clip of that, which I did this morning, I did not realize that the umpires restrained him in a way that they almost choked him out.
He fell. They almost body slammed.
Because they had to.
He was losing his mind.
He was incensed.
Yeah.
And he had the eyes of, like, you know, a murderer out there. He was really mad. The one umpire literally grabs him around, I don't know if it's the throat or the upper chest, and is trying and struggling to hold him back.
He's charging at somebody, and they're, like, kind of, they're, like, hog-tying him around his waist.
Yeah.
Just because he's just losing it. So, but yeah, I remember. That's, like, iconic clip.
The other thing I did not realize about that, which I should have, I didn't realize he actually won that appeal. And they replayed the game about a month later. Like,
really?
Because that clip, it's like everyone sees that clip. All right, so how did it end up? I feel like that story is never told. The end of the story is not told. It's more what happened, why it happened, how it happened. By the way, the end of the story was they did play the game, or at least finish the game, whatever it was, a month later, and the Royals won the game 5-4.
To be fair, Willie wasn't born.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't born when Babe Ruth played either.
True.
I mean, and not for nothing, that was 1983. I was 9. I probably wasn't watching that game.
That is literally
either.
The year I was born.
So, 1983?
Yeah, that was the year I was born.
Okay.
I mean, but I was thinking of some more iconic moments. You brought up boxing. I was thinking about Evander Holyfield and Riddick Bowe, the fan man. Remember the guy that was on a fan and landed in the middle of the ring?
I don't.
You don't remember that?
No, I don't. I remember the guy in the World Series with the Mets and the Red Sox when the guy came flying in.
No, it was a guy, he had a fan on his back with a parachute. It was in The Simpsons. They actually recreated it in The Simpsons. The guy landed in the middle of the ring, and it was just chaos after that.
Really? No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, that's...
And I was alive.
I know you were alive. I know you was alive for that.
I was alive for that, so I don't know. Jason in the Bronx, what's up, Jay?
Hey, one of the huge ones you forgot, the OJ chase during the Knicks playoff game.
You know why I forget? That's a great one.
That's a great one.
I wasn't. That wasn't game-related, but it is game-related because I think you had a lot of players trying to look over to see what all the commotion was about. Yeah. That, you know what, Jason, that's a great one, especially because I was watching that at my house when that happened, and what I do remember from that was when they put the game in the small box on the TV.
I remember being a kid watching it with my dad, and he was just like, I think somebody's chasing OJ.
Yeah.
And I was like, who the hell's? I was like, who's OJ? He was like, well, let me tell you.
You learned.
Right.
You learned. Though it's funny, the Cowboy documentary about Jerry Jones, there's a lot on Super Bowl 27 and going into the Rose Bowl, and they're showing you all the scenes and everything, and one of the scenes is OJ Simpson, you know, walking around like he's the king in Southern California. Makes sense. And it's like, wow, that was 1992. He was only, well, probably January 83. He was only, you know, 15 or 16 months away from his life completely being changed forever.
Well, what was crazy about that, I remember, so by the way, I always give credit when you tell me this topic comes up. The 30 for 30 on OJ was, I think, one of the best things I've ever seen on TV. It was nuts. It was great. But I think overall, another iconic moment for me, and I'm not an Olympian. I love Olympic sports, but that bombing that happened. I remember how...
In Atlanta.
In Atlanta, how crazy that
was.
That's
a good one, too.
And I remember my folks being, like, really worked up about it. And I was just like, man, that was...
Wasn't that an early Sunday morning?
It was, because I think they were bidding for it to happen in Atlanta, and it finally happened. And I mean, Atlanta had done so much to kind of clean up the city. There's so much going on. And then I remember my mom was, like, really distraught by it. I was just like, wow. She was like, you know, this is a big moment. This is happening and stuff. So that was another moment that sticks out in my head.
One more before the break. Mark in Berlin. What's up, Mark?
Hey, good morning, guys.
How you doing?
Do you remember when the guy came out when Monica Sutton stabbed
Sellers? Yes, that's another good one. Absolutely. That was, and that one was terrifying. The fact that that guy could get that close and do that, and the fact that she was still kind of like we talk about, you know, John.
Are we
Carlin
talking like the Tonya Hart?
Got stabbed by a fan on the court.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember that? That's what year was it? 1990, early 90s, I would say.
Okay, so I was a kid. Yeah.
Again.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I mean, I didn't see Joe Namath win the Super Bowl. I know he won the Super Bowl.
1993.
There you go. So
too bad I was too busy playing with Ninja Turtles.
At 10 years old, makes sense.
Yeah.
I always talk about, you know, the fact that Giancarlo Stanton took the fastball in the face, broke his face essentially, and was able to and have a great career after. I think it's very difficult to do to get over that. She was able to still play after that, which is, I cannot imagine something that was easy mentally to get over.
Yeah, get stabbed?
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. We missed a few for sure.
Oh, yeah, we missed a lot.
But those were the five that I thought of top of my head.
I was trying to think about college football-wise. Was there an iconic moment?
I'm sure there have been, but I'm thinking more chaotic more so than iconic.
There had to be something. Didn't
Woody Hayes punch an official?
I thought he punched a player opposing team.
And it was his last game,
wasn't it?
It was
Ohio State Clemson bowl game in like 78.
And it was his last game, right?
His
head coach?
I was trying to
think back, like maybe Miami versus Notre Dame, convicts versus Catholics thing. Did anything pop out? Nothing really happened.
You know what? Nothing sticks out to me other than
I remember David Boston and Charles Woodson fighting in a big rivalry game.
Okay.
That little sideline thing. I was just trying to.
But
And the Stanford Cal thing.
We said that.
All right.
The band on the
Willie
field.
Willie Mays.